pleasure to have speakers, and we try our best as much as we can to give our Talmidim exposure to stars of all level in terms of one of the young and up-and-coming superstars of our community, so Rabbi Shai Schechter. It's a pleasure to have him here and to hear some of his Divrei Torah and exposure to, I told him when I invited him, I always want our guys to have exposure to exciting and talented people, so here's a great opportunity to take advantage, and with no further ado.
Thank you, Rabbi Horn, and thank you. It's a real great kavod. It's a tremendous honor for me to be here. And it's always a great honor to share Divrei Torah with anyone who's willing to listen. So before we begin, I just want to ask that we all keep in mind in our Divrei Torah that we learned today, Refua Shleima, a very dear friend of mine who was going through a very difficult medical condition and is having a very important surgery tomorrow. His name is Avram Mordechai ben Alta Chaya B'soch Sha'ar Chol Yisrael. You can write that down. Shalom, Rabbi Tarragon. Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a great honor. So if we can have him in mind in our tefillos, he really needs a very serious rachamei shamayim. Avraham Mordechai ben Alta Chaya B'soch Sha'ar Chol Yisrael. So let's begin with the discussion about Kiddush. I've been told that everyone here is learning the last parak in Maseches Pesachim, and there's a lot of very important discussion there, and I don't want to overlap with anything you may have heard in Shir, so hopefully we'll try to find some new aspect of the sugya of Kiddush and something that could be meaningful to all of us. So we begin with the Gemara in Pesachim Daf Kuvav, where the Gemara clearly learns out from a pasuk, Zachar Es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, that we have an obligation to say Kiddush both on Friday night as well as on Shabbos day. And the Gemara assumes that the real mitzvah of Kiddush, the real important mitzvah that we have on Shabbos, is the Kiddush on Friday night. Obviously, the Shabbos day Kiddush is only the secondary Kiddush, and that's why we refer to it as the Kiddush HaRabba, which is really a way of saying that it's not as great, it's a Lashon Sagi Nar, but we say that is called the Kiddush HaRabba. But the truth is, the most important part of the Kiddush is the Kiddush that we recite on Friday night. Now, it's a strange concept when you think about it, because in truth, in essence, the Gemara tells us clearly, both in Pesachim, as well as in the Gemara in Beitza, the Gemara in a number of places says that there's a marked distinction between Shabbos and Yom Tov. If you'll notice, on Shabbos, when we end off the bracha in our Shmona Esrei, we say, Mikadesh HaShabbos. We say that the Ribono Shel Olam, that God is the one who is Mikadesh Es HaShabbos. And yet, when we talk about our description of Yom Tov, we say, Mikadesh Yisrael v'hazmanim. So why that distinction? Why do we not have the same uniform text at the end of the bracha both on Shabbos and on Yom Tov? So the Gemara says in Pesachim Daf Kuf Yud Zayin, I don't know if you got up to there yet, but the Gemara says because there's a major difference. Shabbos comes whether you like it or not. Shabbos is going to be here whether you prepare for Shabbos, whether you do anything to make Shabbos feel welcome in your home. Shabbos is going to be here regardless. And therefore the Gemara says, since Shabbos is what we call Kaviya v'kaima, it's here whether you like it or not, therefore, you cannot say that Mekadesh Yisrael v'HaShabbos. It's not that the Ribono Shel Olam created us and we are the ones who are Mekadesh as HaShabbos. Shabbos is Kadosh by itself, whether you like it or not. However, when it comes to Yom Tov, without our communal involvement, without our being Mekadesh L'Chodesh, without our taking the first step to make sure that Yom Tov is actually going to happen, Yom Tov will not happen. And therefore, we assume that the bracha there is Mekadesh Yisrael v'hazmanim. It's because the Ribono Shel Olam endowed us with Kedusha, now we in turn have the opportunity to be Mekadesh, the Yom Tov, the Zman, as well, with the Kedusha that we have, we give it over, we extend it to the day as well. And that's where we find the major difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov. In fact, the Rishonim ask a very important question in the end of Maseches Beitza. The Rishonim are bothered with something which you would say is a very elementary question, but it's a very important one. You'll notice that there's a major difference between the end of Shabbos and the end of Yom Tov. We say Havdalah both at the end of Shabbos and the end of Yom Tov, but at the end of Shabbos we were say Bari Mina Besamim. At the end of Yom Tov we don't smell any Besamim. Why is that the case? Why shouldn't we smell the Besamim at the end of Shabbos and Yom Tov equally? So the truth is, the Rishonim say, the reason why we smell the Besamim is because we assume that we have a Neshama Yisera, and after Shabbos is over, we lose that special Neshama Yisera, whatever exactly it means. Rashi has a strange comment that the Neshama Yisera means we have more room in our stomachs to consume more food. That's a strange interpretation of Neshama Yisera. I think most assume that it means we have some sort of very elevated spirit that comes to us on Shabbos. And since after Shabbos is over, that leaves, therefore we assume that one has to smell the Besamim in order to rejuvenate themselves, in order to feel better about the fact that they just lost something very dear, very special to them. So that's what the Rishonim say. Well, if that's the case, why don't we smell the Besamim after Yom Tov is over? So some Rishonim posit, some Rishonim assume that there is only a Neshama Yisera on Shabbos, and there is no Neshama Yisera on Yom Tif, and therefore after Yom Tif is over, we have nothing to lose because we never had it. So there's no reason to smell the Besamim after Yom Tif is over. That's what some Rishonim say. And other Rishonim reject that, and they say, how can you say that on Yom Tif we don't have a Neshama Yisera? In fact, the Stechemed argues, in the name of many Achronim, that the reason why we say Nishmas on Shabbos and Yom Tif is to highlight the fact that we have a Neshama Yisera on Shabbos and Yom Tif. We only say Nishmas on the days of the calendaric year when we are given, when we're granted this opportunity of having a Neshama Yisera. So from the fact that we have the Piyut of Nishmas recited on Yom Tif, isn't that a clear indication that on Yom Tif we have a Neshama Yisera equally as on Shabbos? And if that's true, why is it that we don't smell the Besamim after Yom Tif is over the same way we would smell them after the completion of a Shabbos? And the Ramban explains, and then it's expanded upon in the Shem Yishmol, the Ramban explains so beautifully, because on Shabbos, he says, the Neshama Yisera comes, easy come, easy go. The Neshama Yisera comes whether you invest anything in Shabbos or not, whether you do anything to deserve it. Shabbos comes every seventh day of the week, and therefore you're granted a Neshama Yisera. Once Shabbos is over, the Neshama Yisera leaves. You have to smell the Besamim. However, when you have the experience, the opportunity of celebrating a Yom Tif, that is not the same as Shabbos. Yom Tif, which needs our involvement, Yom Tif, which needs us to be involved and to be Mekadish the Yom Tif, therefore, says the Ramban, since we had to invest to create the Kedusha, that Neshama Yisera that's created will never leave us, even when Yom Tif leaves, because something that we invested in, something that we worked hard in, is something that will be with us forever. And therefore, there's no reason to smell Besamim after Yom Tif is over, because that Neshama Yisera that we created is something that will never leave. It's a beautiful interpretation, and if you didn't hear it was the Ramban, you would believe it's probably in some Chassidus Sefer, which it is, but the Ramban is actually the first one who said it. So it's a very important comment, and especially coming off the heels of a Shavuos, and we think about how much we invested in a Yom Tov and how much we were excited about it, how much we celebrated with the Torah, and what exactly we walk away with. Don't ever forget that everything that we elevated ourselves, everything that we invested in the Yom Tov and in the experience being something special and unique, is something that will be with us forever, and it's something that will never fade, it's something that will never go away, and it's something we have now kept with us for all eternity. Like the Pasuk says in last week's Parsha, the Chafetz Chaim comments in his commentary on Chumash, that in the Pasuk in last week's Parsha we're told, V'ish es kadoshav lo sihiyeh. So the simple understanding of the Pasuk, for those who learn Chumash with the Rishonim, so the Rishonim explain, Ish es kadoshav lo tihiyeh means, I have an obligation to go and give the Kohanim all the Truma. I have to give the Maaser away to the Levim. I have to do everything I have to do, but I have what we call a Tovas Anot. The Gemara says, I have an ability to choose which Kohen or which Levi I want to give my gifts to. They can't come and grab it from me. I have a right to have a Tovas Anot. That's what it means, Ishas Kadoshav, Lo Tiyeh. Yes, it doesn't really belong to me, but it belongs to me with respect to the fact that I have the ability to give it to someone over somebody else. However, the Chafetz Chaim says, although that is the simple explanation of the Pasuk, he says maybe it also means, Ish es kadoshav lo sihiyeh. Anything that a person invests in the areas of Kedusha in their own lives, lo tihiyeh, says the Chafetz Chaim. That's something that's an investment in yourself. It's something that will be with you forever. It's something that will never dissipate. It will never fade. It will never go away. Because all that we engage, all that we get ourselves involved in, all that we invest of our energy, of our time, of our effort, is something that is here forever. And as you walk away from a Shavuos, and certainly as you wrap up, I'm sure what was a most incredible and difficult year. I don't know if everybody worked that hard in high school, but you obviously work much harder when you're in yeshiva and you're learning 3 Siddurim a day and you're trying to accomplish a lot. Don't ever forget that Ish es kadoshav lo sihiyeh. All of that investment, all of that hard work, all of that effort, all of that energy, wherever you might be next year and whatever you might be involved in, you already have made an investment in yourself, and it's something that will be with you forever. So back to where we started when it comes to Shabbos, so we have this distinction between Shabbos and Yom Tif, that Shabbos comes whether you like it or not. Shabbos is kaviyah v'kaima, says the Gemara, whereas Yom Tif is something that you need the Jewish people to be involved in its Kedusha actually coming about. And if that's the case, it's a strange concept. Why do we have, if Shabbos is Kadosh with or without us, so what does the whole concept of Kiddush actually mean? Shabbos has the Kedusha without the Jewish people being Mekadosh it. So what does the Kiddush accomplish? And this is a major question, but you see that there's some sort of elevated and enhanced stage of Kedusha that we can add above and beyond the regular Kedusha that Shabbos brings on its own. It's a similar concept to what we find in the Gemara Nedarim Daf Yud Gimel, where the Gemara says that when you have a Bechor that is born, so an animal that gives birth to a firstborn, as we know, is Kadosh Merechem. It's Kedusha is a part of the animal from the time that it's born, but yet the Gemara still says that although an animal that is born, and it's the firstborn animal, is kadosh meirechem, but still we have an obligation as individuals, as owners of that animal, to enhance that kedusha and to add to it by being mekadosh it bepeh as well. So you already see we have such a concept, that although something might be kadosh already by itself, we still have the ability to add on a Tosefes Kedusha, and that's really what we try to do on Shabbos as well. Although Shabbos is there, although Shabbos has the Kedusha, has the sanctity, this is something that we add on to later on by ourselves as well. So the Sefer HaChinuch is bothered. Why is it that we have an obligation to make Kiddush on Shabbos? Why do we do it over a cup of wine? Where did the wine come from? So the Sefer HaChinuch explains very simply. He says, because Kiddush is all about Shednikva Belibeinu Emunas Chiddush HaOlam. He says the point of Kiddush is that we should try and inculcate the feeling of Emunah BaHashem into ourselves. And he says, this is why we say in our Kiddush, Kisheshes Yamim Asa Hashem, is to try to remind ourselves and the world that the Ribbono Shel Olam created our world in 6 days. Uvayom HaShvi'i Shavas Ve'inafash. And he says, the greatest way to ever drive home a message to any individual is if you give them food. Chazal knew that food works. And therefore, says the Sefer HaChinuch, the greatest way to bring home the message and make it a powerful one for ourselves is if we do it along with a cup of wine. Who enjoys anything more than a cup of wine? I can tell you, I landed this morning from Israel. I'm sorry, from America. And it was pretty wild because the flight was full of Hasidim who came. There's some big Hasidish wedding tonight. I'm not really aware what the story is. But one of these fine gentlemen had the great idea of drinking a few cups of wine on the flight. As it turned out, it didn't do so well for him. I don't know if you're aware, but maybe you should be careful next time you fly, that apparently the altitude does something to the alcohol level in the body. Not sure how that works exactly. But as it turns out, there was a doctor and his wife who were standing next to me and talking in the middle of the flight, and right then, right in the middle of everything, they start screaming and yelling, they need a doctor, and this woman goes to the back to try to help this man, and it turns out they thought he was like passing away. They really thought he was like having a heart attack and that was it. Nobody knew that he had drank so much in the middle of the flight. So wine actually does something to our bodies. We hope that we don't end up like that guy on the plane this morning that had serious issues. But one good thing came out of it. They gave the doctor and his wife an upgrade to business class. But otherwise, it was a big commotion. It was a big problem on the plane. But as it is, says the Sefer HaChinuch, because we know that wine makes us have a certain sensation, makes us have a certain feeling, therefore we do the Kiddush over a cup of wine, because we know that that will help us have the feeling even more for that which we are saying. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, if that's true, why is it that you're allowed to make Kiddush over pas as well? We all know if you don't have wine, you're allowed to make Kiddush over bread. Whereas by Havdalah, if you don't have wine, you cannot use bread. Why is that? Says the Sefer HaChinuch, it's the same. Because on Friday night, everybody comes into Shabbos hungry. So either you're going to have wine or you're going to have bread. And that's the way you're going to have a powerful experience with what it is that you're trying to accomplish. However, he says, HaMatzoi Shabbos, after you've sat and ate 3 meals, and everybody's busting at the seams, and you have nothing more that you can fit inside of yourself, says the Sefer HaChinuch, the last thing you want at that point is some bread. And therefore, he says, you cannot make Havdalah over bread, because Havdalah is not going to be able to be a powerful experience if you do it over bread. The only thing that's going to work for you then is either wine or Chamar Medina, to have a drink. But to have bread at that point is not going to be a meaningful experience. So this is something that the Sefer HaChinuch explains on a very practical level, why it is that we have wine, why it is that perhaps we would allow someone to have bread. But that's the basic understanding with regard to Kiddush. And the Rambam quotes this Gemara, and the Rambam tells us clearly that the mitzvah of Kiddush is a mitzvah midaraisa. He quotes the Gemara, he quotes all of these sources as well. And he says, the Rambam adds in a caveat here, and he says, part of the mitzvah of Kiddush is to highlight the uniqueness and the distinction of Shabbos. And that means, says the Rambam, you have to bookend the Shabbos with that special uniqueness of Shabbos by Kiddush at the beginning and Havdalah at the end. But he says all of those are subsumed under one mitzvah. The mitzvah of Kiddush on Shabbos is a mitzvah that's twofold. Number one, you have a mitzvah at the beginning to be Mekadosh Es HaShabbos, to show the uniqueness of Shabbos by highlighting it. And then at the very end of Shabbos, you have to point it out once again by saying Havdalah. So that's what the Rambam tells us. Now what I'd like to focus on, I know that was all an introduction that was a little bit lengthy, but what I'd like to focus on is, now that we assume that we learn from the Pasuk of Zachor Es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, that Kiddush is actually a mitzvah midaraisa, how long do I have? 120. Okay. Put your seatbelts on. So, now that we assume that Kiddush is a mitzvah midaraisa, that has major consequences. It has major consequences, lahalacha, number one, for the following. Let's say you'll say it's a very unusual case, but it comes up, lahalacha, every so often. We actually had a story in the shul. There was on the first day of Sukkot, somebody who went on a hatzalah call, and he was busy with the patient all day long. By the time he came home, his family was waiting to eat with him, and they sat down and they ate. He ran into shul during Bein HaShemashos, the end of the first day of Yom Tov of Sukkot, and he realized he didn't shake the lulav and esrog yet. He couldn't believe it. He forgot all about it. He was busy doing mitzvahs all day long. He forgot to do that. So he came in and he asked, what do I do now? It's Bein HaShemashos. And as we know, Bein HaShemashos is a Safek Yom, Safek Laila. And he wanted to know what he should do. So I told him that the Mishnah Berurah discusses his case, and the Mishnah Berurah writes that when a person has such a scenario, even though it's Bein HaShemashos and it's Safek Yom, Safek Laila, since we're dealing on the first day of Sukkot and it's a Safek Daraisa, because maybe you haven't fulfilled your mitzvah midaraisa yet, therefore we assume you go ahead, you shake the lulav and esrog during Bein HaShemashos, and you also make a brecha upon the mitzvah that you are performing. So that's what the Mishnah Berurah writes. Similarly over here, when you have somebody who, let's say, goes on a hatzalah call, forgets all about Kiddush, doesn't remember to make Kiddush at all on Shabbos, or a patient in the hospital, and finally they wake up and they realize it's almost the end of Shabbos, it's Bein HaShemashos already at the end of Shabbos, and now they remember they have to make Kiddush, what is the halacha for such a person? Says the Mishnah Berurah and the other Achronim, you have to say Kiddush, even though it's Bein HaShemashos, and even though we assume Safek Brachas Lahakel, usually we say when a person is in doubt about a bracha, we should suggest to them that the bracha not be recited, because you're running the risk of a bracha levatela. Yet, in this scenario, we say a person should go ahead and recite the Kiddush, because since we're dealing with a suffix, mitzvah midaraisa, therefore you err on the side of caution, and you recite the bracha. And the same goes, says the Magen Avraham, when it comes to berachas hamazon. Someone who's not sure whether or not they bench, so you'll say, suffix brachas lahakel. No, we don't say suffix brachas lahakel by berachas hamazon, because that is, once again, a mitzvah midaraisa. And therefore, we don't apply the principle of safek brachas lahakel when we talk about a mitzvah midaraisa. So that's consequence, nafkamina number one, of the fact that Kiddush is a mitzvah midaraisa, that if a person realizes at the end of Shabbos, at Bein HaShemashos, that they have not yet recited Kiddush, we would tell them that they should go ahead and recite the Kiddush with the bracha, and that's not a problem of safek brachas lahakel at all. A second nafkamina, which is actually a very relevant question, and people don't even realize that it's relevant, is the following. And this is a shaila that comes up all the time. It's based on a Gemara Maseches Nida, Daf Mem Vav Amud Aleph. So the Gemara says what we refer to as the Chazaka Derava. Anybody know what the Chazaka Derava is? So, you should know from now on, whenever someone says Chazaka Derava, you'll know exactly what it means. They're referring to a Gemara in Nida, Daf Mem Vav. Amar Rava, where Rava says, Kitana Shehigia Lechlal Shnoseha. When you have a young girl who reaches the age of bas mitzvah, says the Gemara, Eina tzricha bedika. Rava says she doesn't need to physically be checked to see does she actually have shtei saris, is she really a gedola or not. Chazaka hevia simanim. We have a right to assume that a woman at 12 years old is probably already considered to be a gedola. And therefore says Rava that we have a right to rely on that chazaka, and we have a right to assume that she is a gedola. Now the Rivash, who was one of the gedoli harishonim, writes that when we talk about this chazaka, which we call the Chazaka de Rava, that is something that he refers to as a Chazaka Berura. That's not just, oh, we have a right to assume that she's a Gedola. No, that is almost definitive. It's almost absolute. You can assume almost with certainty that once the girl reaches 12 years old, we assume almost with certainty that she is a Gedola, that she is officially a Bas Mitzvah. And this is the opinion of the Rivash. This is the opinion of the Noda Yehuda. This is the opinion of many Achronim. However, the Chai Adam quotes a machlokas between the Beis Meir and other Achronim, where he says, I'm not really so convinced that this is a chazaka that's so strong that it's almost with certainty. After all, he says, we find by certain halachos that a woman by bas mitzvah, you know, we're not going to be so sure that she's a bas mitzvah. He says, by chalitza, for one example, the Gemara says in Yevamos, we actually have to check to make sure the woman is a gedola. If the Rivash and other Rishonim are correct that this is a chazaka gemura, it's a clear, it's evident, it's apparent, it's obvious to everyone that she's certainly a gedola, so then why would you assume that a woman has to be checked before doing chalitza? That shouldn't make sense. Why can you rely on the chazaka? So this is a major discussion in the Achronim. How do we view this, what we call the chazaka derava? What exactly is the status of that chazaka? And the Avnei Nezer weighs in on the issue, and all the Achronim are busy trying to figure out what really is our perspective when we talk about somebody, a boy or a girl who becomes a bar or bas mitzvah? What is our assumption? Are they really a bar or bas mitzvah with certainty, or do we just assume we have a right to rely on the rov and assume that they're probably bar or bas mitzvah? What is the difference? So the Acharonim say the difference is, can they perform a mitzvah midaraisa on behalf of other people or not? So if you assume that a boy or girl who is bar bas mitzvah is not really bar bas mitzvah because we don't know with certainty, we didn't check them out, well then, again, if the boy is growing a beard, if the girl has certain features in her body, so then we know already they're a bar bas mitzvah, but let's say it's not so apparent. So the question is, do we have a right to say, let's say on Friday night when we make Kiddush, the Mishnah Berurah discusses the case, do we have a right to assume on Friday night, let's say the father of the home is on a business trip, and he leaves home his newly bar mitzvah son, and he's all excited about the fact that the young bar mitzvah boy is going to make Kiddush for the whole family. Does that really work? If the whole family is obligated in Kiddush on a level of daraisa, if it's a mitzvah midaraisa, and we don't know with certainty that he's actually a mechuyev bedaber, we don't know with certainty that he's really a bar mitzvah, how can he perform the mitzvah on behalf of all of us? How can he be the one who's singled out to do the mitzvah on our behalf if, after all, he's not even obligated to do the mitzvah because he might not even be a bar chiyuvah? He might not even be a bar mitzvah. And therefore we assume, since Kiddush on Friday night is a mitzvah midaraisa, the only time you're allowed to have a bar or bas mitzvah child, age, be the one to make Kiddush on behalf of everybody else is if you know with certainty that they are a bar or bas mitzvah. But if not, then you're running the risk of perhaps not performing your mitzvah midaraisa of Kiddush on Friday night because perhaps this child is not even a mechuyev bedaber at all. And the Magen Avraham talks about it in other contexts as well, and he says, well, what about a bar bas mitzvah boy who wants to have, they want to have a class in safras, and they want to teach them how to write mezuzahs, or whatever it might be. So now you have a katan or ketana, who now becomes bar bas mitzvah, a bar mitzvah. The Gemara says you have to be a man in order to write a Sefer Torah Tefillah mezuzah. So the Gemara says when you have a man who's of the age to be a bar bas mitzvah, so then they're allowed to write it. Well, is that really true, says the Magen Avraham? Maybe they're not able to write it until we know with certainty that there's somebody who's really a mechuyev bedaber, until we know with certainty that you're really obligated in the mitzvah of putting up that mezuzah. But if we're not really sure, and all we're doing is relying on the chazaka derava, perhaps that is not sufficient, perhaps that is not good enough. There's a lot more to say about that, but that's issue number one to think about. Now that we know that we rely on the chazaka derava, when it comes to mitzvahs midirabbanan, the Mishnah Berurah says, we have a right to assume that the chazaka derava is correct, but when it comes to mitzvahs midaraisa, we say that you shouldn't rely on the chazaka derava. You should really know with certainty that the child is a bar or bas mitzvah. It's not good enough to rely on the rov, on the chazaka. So the question is, how do you figure out what the requisite criterion are to deem someone a bar or bas mitzvah? So you'll say, what do you mean? We all know it's 12 or 13 years old. What's the question? Well, the question goes as follows. What does it mean? Does it mean 12 or 13 halachic years? Or does it mean 12 or 13 calendaric years? So what exactly does that mean? The difference is going to be, do you have to wait me'es le'es or not? So take, for example, by bris milah. The Mishnah Lamelech and other Achronim write, clearly by bris milah, we know by Yom Hashmini Imol B'sar Elaso Parshas Tazria, we're told, on the eighth day after the child is born, you have to perform a bris milah. How do you calculate 8 days? So let's say a child is born 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Do you have to wait till 5 o'clock in the afternoon 8 days later? Anybody? No, of course not. We all make the bris milah early in the mornings. Rizim akdimin lemitzvus. So you see, all you need is 8 halachic days. So as long as you have 8 halachic days, even if it's not 8 full calendaric days, that should be good enough. However, let's say by bris milah, the Rambam writes, what happens when you have a child who's sick and cannot have the bris milah on time? So the halach is you have to wait till the child is better, and you have to wait 7 days from the time that the doctors say the child is healthy enough to have a bris milah. You wait 7 days from that time. There we assume you have to wait 7 days me'es le'es. It has to be actually to the date, to the moment, to the minute of when the doctor said it's okay, it's healthy. That's how long you have to wait. Why don't you say the same thing there? We should wait 7 halachic days. Why are we waiting 7 calendaric days? What? The answer is it's a health issue. What is a halachic day going to help you? If we assume that you need 7 real days in order to become healthy, well then you need 7 full days. And it's not going to be good enough just because you have a halachic day. It's all what you're saying, that's absolutely correct. So the question is, that's with regard to bris milah. What about with regard to other issues where we need to have a certain amount of time? So take, for example, a bar or bas mitzvah. When we say you have to wait 12 or 13 years, so how long does that actually mean? Does that mean you wait 12 or 13 calendaric years? Or does that mean you wait 12 or 13 halachic years? So let's say you have a child who's born at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, 12 years ago or 13 years ago, do they have to wait to become an actual bar chiyuva until 5 o'clock in the afternoon, 12 or 13 years later? So the Sheiltos is of the opinion that yes, listen what the Sheiltos writes. Now, keep in mind, the Sheiltos was, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think the Shiltas de Rav Achai Gaon, he was one of the Gedolei HaGaonim, who lived right after the period of the Amoraim, of the Chasimas HaTalmud. I think the Shiltas de Rav Achai Gaon, if I'm not mistaken, you could all check it up. I think we assume that that's the earliest Sefer after the time of the Gemara, I think. So it's a pretty early source. So the Shiltas de Rav Achai Gaon is of the opinion that Lo mikri ish elatinog ben yud gimel shana v'yom echad me eis la'eis. He says you are not considered a bar chayuva, you're not considered a bar or bas mitzvah until you are 12 or 13 years old to the minute. And unless you have that calendaric date, which is in its completion, you cannot be considered a bar or bas mitzvah because you're missing something. You're missing something. So here the Shiltas writes, we have a major distinction between the mitzvah of bris milah and the mitzvah of, let's say, bar mitzvah. When it comes to bris milah, you just wait 8 halachic days. All of a sudden, when it comes to bar mitzvah or bas mitzvah, we assume you're not considered a gadol or a gedola until you have 12 or 13 calendaric years to the moment, to the day, me'es la'es, what we call it. However, this is the opinion of the Shiltas, but it is rejected by all the Achronim. So the Bach and the Magen Avram, and the Shach and the Sman Choshen Mishpat, and all the Achronim assume that the Shiltas is not the accepted opinion, and the same way by a Bris Milah, we assume that you wait 12 or 13 halachic days, I'm sorry, you wait 8 halachic days, so too by a Bar Bas Mitzvah, you wait 12 or 13 halachic days, you do not wait 12 or 13 calendaric years. So that's the opinion of most of the Gedolei Achronim. The Netziv weighs in on the issue, and the Netziv says, what do you mean? You all think that the Shiltas is wrong? Who are you to disagree with the Shiltas? Yes, we have great respect for the Magen Avraham and the Shach and the Bach and the Taz and everybody else, but after all, it's the Shiltas. And he says, don't you know the Trumas Hadeshon and other Rishonim say, called Dvar of Divrei Kabbalah, everything that the Shiltas, the Rav Achai Gaon, suggested is Divrei Kabbalah. It's very important. It's something you cannot just laugh off. So how do you have a right to just reject the opinion of the Shiltas without really giving it the proper cover, the proper respect that it deserves? And the Netziv argues that maybe the reason why everyone disagreed is because they didn't have a Shiltas. And he writes, he posits, that had they only had a Shiltas, nobody would have said what they said. Now again, that's a very easy argument to make. Well, you never would have said that had you known that someone else said differently. Yeah, but we don't really know. Maybe the Magen Avraham did have a Shiltas, and he still felt that the Shiltas is not correct, is not the accepted opinion. So that's a major point of discrepancy. Do we accept the Shiltas or not? And therefore, there were some Gedolim who were machmir, that when it came to the child who's a Bar Bas Mitzvah, there were some Gedolim who felt that the proper way to do it is, you know, you celebrate the Bar Mitzvah, but let's say you have a child who was born 10 o'clock at night, so that child, after, even though you celebrate the Bar Mitzvah at 7 o'clock, once the halachic year comes in, but you should have the child say Kriya Shema once again after 10 o'clock at night in order to be Mekayim the Mitzvah Midaraisa, even according to the opinion of the Shiltas. Or some Achronim say, if let's say you have a child who was born on Rosh Hashanah in the afternoon, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, you should try to go ahead and be Machmir and do a Tkiya Shofar again in order that the child should be Yotze, the opinion of Tkiya Shofar, according to the Shiltas as well, once he becomes a Gadol on the day of Rosh Hashanah. So this is just a little bit about the consequence of the fact that we assume that Kiddush is a mitzvah midaraisa, and what comes forth as a result of that very important concept. Since we assume it's a mitzvah midaraisa, we have to be vigilant about the fact that we actually have a bar chiyuva who's performing the mitzvah, somebody who we know with certainty is a really a bar or bas mitzvah, and we cannot simply rely on a chazaka derava. Because as we said, the Achronim come to the conclusion that whenever you have a mitzvah midaraisa, you don't have a right to rely on a chazaka. Only by a mitzvah midarabanan can we rely on a chazaka. Let me just close with one short hashkafa insight, and that is Rav Hirsch writes in the Siddur, and you can check it up on your own. It's such a beautiful comment. He says, you'll notice that we have the practice that we say Kiddush both in shul, and then we say Kiddush once again when we come home. And it's very strange. Why do we do such a thing? If everybody nowadays, we don't have any guests in the shul, and we don't really have anybody who's eating the meal in the shul, that's really where the practice started. Why do we still continue to do this today? Why do we continue on that minhag if it really is not applicable to our society at all? Says Rav Hirsch, and it's a very important insight that he makes, he says, because very often you have individuals who are very good at being mekadesh in front of other people. When you're in the context of your community, you daven with kavana, when you're in the yeshiva, you make sure to pay attention to your learning, to your davening, and you're making sure that you're keeping up with everybody else, and you're making a big kiddush Hashem. Now what happens when you go home? Says Rav Hirsch, how often are there people who forget to make Kiddush when they get home? How often are there people who can do all kinds of chesed, who can do all kinds of things in public, And then in the privacy of their own homes, they're not so careful with the way they act. They're big balei chesed out in the public, and they're running on the hatzalah call, and they're doing everything that needs to be done. What about when your wife asks you to help her out in the house? What happens when your mother asks you to help out? What happens when somebody at home, in the privacy of your own home, asks you to do a chesed for them? Are you just as careful there as you were in the public sphere as well? And this, says Rav Hirsch, is the reason why we continue to make Kiddush both in the Beis HaKnesses as well as in the private home. Because we have to always remind ourselves that it's not good enough just to be Mekadesh in one or the other. It's not good enough just to be Mekadesh in the shul or just in the home. One always has to make sure they have the proper balance of being a Baal Chesed, of being a person who exudes the Torah values both in public as well as in private. And perhaps my father once told me, this is the understanding in the Mishnah. We all know the famous Mishnah, Al Tadin es Chavercha ad Shetagia Lemkoma. The Mishnah says, you shouldn't judge other people till you are in their circumstances. You don't really know the pressure somebody else has. You don't really know what's pushing them to do something or make a decision or to act in a certain way. Don't judge other people. You don't really know what's behind the decision that they're making. So my father once told me, perhaps another interpretation is, Al Tadin es Chavercha ad Shetagia Lemkoma. If you want to really size up a person and understand what they're really about, Tagilim Komo, go to the privacy of their own home. Go see how they act behind closed doors when nobody else is watching, when they're not in the public sphere, when they're not in all their titles, all the accolades, when no one's looking at them. It's very nice to be a famous personality and to do all kinds of things and to be recognized for what you do. But what happens when you're Tagilim Komo, when you go to that person's private home and you ask the family, how is the person at home and how do they act with regard to their own family, to those who are most precious to them? Do they act with the same derech eretz, with the same kavod, with the same respect? Do they do the same chesed? Are they the same lives of Kedusha v'tahara that they show the world that they're living? Is that really what they're living in their own privacy of their own homes? Or is it something that they only limit to the public sphere? And that, says Rav Hirsch, is such an important aspect of what it is that we do as Jews. We don't only make sure to have our Judaism, our Yiddishkeit together with others, not just in the public sphere, not just in the yeshiva, but also as you prepare yourselves to go back out into the world and to go back into your own private homes and to spend some time in the summer, not in the confines of this Makom Torah. Let's all make sure that we remind ourselves as well that the Kiddush in the home, that Tagia Lemkomo, is something that is incredibly important. I wish all of you a continued bracha and hatzlacha in all that you do. And for those of you who are coming back for next year, you should only continue to soar mala mala, to have continued siyata deshmaya in all of your learning, and to grow to become great, great Talmidei Chachamim. Okay.